Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. As communities throughout the state continue to look for opportunities to increase the availability of clean energy, many are looking at the feasibility of forming community choice aggregations. So what is a community choice aggregation, or CCA, for energy? How does it benefit communities like ours? Advocates believe it's an effective way for communities to become more resilient and develop the local economy by providing long-term electrical rate stability, energy efficiency, an increase in renewable energy, and the creation of jobs. My guests today will be talking more about the topic, and they are Eric Viem, member of the SLO Clean Energy Leadership Team and founding partner and senior engineer for Stockman's Water and Energy, a San Luis Obispo-based company helping to optimize water and energy use on the Central Coast farms and vineyards. Cordell Stillam, deputy chief engineer of the Sonoma County Water Agency, under whose guidance the communities of Sonoma began the exploration to create Sonoma Clean Power, that has paved the pathway for San Luis Obispo communities to explore a community choice aggregation development. And of course, you are part of this show, so you can bring your voice into our conversation always by calling us at 781-3875 with your questions, comments. And again, that's 781-3875. And we may have joining us on the air possibility of, is it Tam Hunt. Tam Hunt, who's, and where is Tam maybe going to be calling from?
Well, Tam Hunt is based out of both Santa Barbara and Hilo, Hawaii, so he'll be calling us from Hawaii.
Oh, he is calling him from Hawaii, and Tam is the owner of Community Renewable Solution LLC, a renewable energy project development and policy advocacy firm that's based, as you mentioned, in Santa Barbara and Hawaii. So good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome.
Thank you, Chris.
So I think the first question is, you know, I'm not really sure, community choice aggregation, it's not the, you know, the snazziest of terms, but what the heck is it and what does it mean? Eric.
Yeah, well, community choice aggregation, absolutely not what I would have called it, but but what it is a powerful tool for our communities to choose where our power is coming from. Essentially, we can pool the buying power of the homes and businesses and local governments and use that to make choices about what type of power we buy and where that power comes from.
So now there are, as I was trying to do some research for today's show, there are only six states, is that correct, that have the CCA structure in place right now?
Absolutely. So CCA is currently available in six states. In California, it was made into law in 2002 under a law called AB 117. And that laid out the framework for the creation of these types of programs.
And that law was in reaction to the power crisis in the early 2000s. The state legislature wanted legislation wanted to give communities more options than just the investor-owned utilities.
Okay. And in areas like the one here where we have one power option, is that a concern that kind of generated this, or...
Well, the law was created to provide a choice for consumers.
Right.
Right now, you don't have a choice. You have one investor-owned utility.
Yeah.
By forming a community choice aggregation, a community can offer a choice to their citizens. That choice can, you know, the power mix or how you create that can take the flavor of the community, not necessarily just one size fits all from the investor-owned utility.
Okay. And we have Tom Hunt, who is joining us on the air. Tom, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
And Tom, you are called. We were trying to decide where you're going to be calling from. So is it Santa Barbara or Hawaii?
Yeah, well, I said good afternoon, but it's actually morning here, so I'm in Hawaii right now.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Tom, how is it that you got involved with community choice aggregation?
I got involved about 12 years ago when I became involved in energy policy more generally. And I was very intrigued by the idea of local control and the tools to go to higher levels of renewables than you can otherwise. And I maintain that view today. I'm really excited by the fact we have now working examples in California and elsewhere actually doing this.
And so from your perspective, what are the benefits of the CCA program?
Well, certainly, I think local control is a big one. Having local voices and voting on your power options is always good. And having competition is great. As I believe Eric mentioned this a minute ago, typically you have only one choice, the investor-owned utility. And certainly they do a good job providing power. But it's good to have choices to spur competition, to spur higher renewables if that's the desire locally. At the same time, there are, in fact, savings possible because you can own facilities, solar, wind, what have you, locally using much lower cost public money because of the lower risk associated with public financing. So there's many benefits that come from community choice.
So are there risks involved with this kind of a program?
There are some risks, for sure, but the smart way to do it is to know what the risks are and to plan accordingly. And in this case, there's kind of two main strategies for CCA, community choice. One is essentially hiring a third party to provide power, and you control what power you get. You're going to pay a bit of a premium for that, though, because you're not using public dollars to finance. The second strategy is using public dollars to finance your own facilities, and because you can get lower interest rates doing that, you can have more savings. Either way, though, you control what power you get and where it comes from. Another big benefit, too, actually, you can spur local development of renewables. For example, a feed-in tariff policy allows customers to build, for example, solar panels on rooftops and sell power directly to the community choice aggregator. And that would be under a long-term contract at a set rate. So you actually can bring money back to your community, too, by going for community choice.
One other point I'd make is that with regards to risk, the investor-owned utilities face the same risks that the community choice aggregation would.
And you were going to say something, Eric, here? Or?
Yeah, I think we spoke to a lot of that is the having two existing programs in California, those risks are well understood, and work has been done. The main idea is to understand what the risks are and then to take the steps to mitigate those risks. And Cordell is an expert in what those are, and I'm sure could elaborate for many hours on what they are and what is, Sonoma Clean Power has done to mitigate that.
I'll spare you the several hours.
Can we step back for a moment and talk about just simply how does this work? Because I'm not sure I understand this.
Okay. Well, the law allows a community or a group of communities to advertise their intent to form a community choice aggregation. That means that they can form the entity that will purchase power from the grid, either through a third party or through projects they build themselves. Then that power is distributed and transmitted over PG&E's lines to the customers. The bill would then be one bill from PG&E, which would have the generation cost, which is broken out on your bill already. It wouldn't say PG&E generation, it would say community choice aggregation generation costs. And then there's another line item there for transmission and distribution, which would be what PG&E charges, what they already charge for transmission and distribution. That's basically how it works, is you're just replacing the generation cost with your own purchased power.
And in doing that, then, is that a conflict with PG&E? I mean, is there a conflict going into this with the power provider?
We, in Sonoma County, we did not have much conflict with PG&E going into this. They had been through this with Marin County and Marin Clean Energy. And in Marin, they did fight very hard to try and stop that community choice aggregation. They spent quite a bit of time and money with advertising and other methods that were intended to undermine that process.
To prevent the formation of a CCA?
Yes.
Okay.
But like I said, our relationship with PG&E has been very cordial, and we work well with them.
What are the disadvantages to PG&E? Is it loss of revenue for them?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Okay.
I haven't seen all of their numbers and so on, but they do lose a small portion of their market for generation, but they keep all of their market for transmission and distribution. And that's, I think, one of the keys here is that the legislature seems to be trying to push PG&E and Southern California Edison, the other investor-owned utilities, to being more transmission and distribution related. I mean, even in the bankruptcy process that PG&E went through, they were required to divest themselves of a number of their generation facilities to try and push them just to being transmission and distribution.
So is the intent of this process to find more ways of creating energy?
Not necessarily more ways,
uh-huh.
Just giving people an option as to how their energy is generated. And, you know, that can take many forms. In Sonoma County, we've decided that we want to try and be more green. So we have a base offering of 33% renewable, and we also have an option for 100% locally generated renewable. Other communities have different power mixes. I know back in the Midwest, where Community Choice is going great guns, that some of the communities there are going just for the price. They want to find the cheapest power available, so they're not focused on the renewable side of it. It's like I mentioned before, it's really the flavor of the community. The community decides what their power mix is.
And Tam, for you, your firm is both in Santa Barbara and in Hawaii. In Santa Barbara, is this an initiative that is also being pursued? Is this action that's being pursued?
It is, yeah. It's been some interest for years, and it's really heated up in the last year. My former employer, the Community Environmental Council, put on a conference at UC Santa Barbara to really highlight the potential for CCA to bring more renewables to our county and our region. And there is interest at the county and city level to pursue CCA and possibly join the Marin or join the San Luis, and we'll see how that unfolds. As you may know, though, right now the immediate struggle is to defeat a bill that is pending in California that would really undermine the CCA law, and this is AB 2145. So right now the Santa Barbara County folks and the advocates are really focused on defeating that bill to ensure it is, in fact, an option moving forward.
And what's the sponsorship behind that bill, Tam?
Well, it's complex, but essentially it seems to be utility workers and utilities themselves, perhaps indirectly. You know, there's no direct evidence for that, but there's a long history here. So utility workers seem to worry about the competitive effect on their jobs. And again, this is, you know, a lot of this is kind of implication. But essentially, when you look at what the bill would do, it is directly undermining the CCA law as written, and would make it very difficult to actually become a CCA. It's been revised a couple of times. It's not quite as bad as it was, but it's still pretty bad. And it seemed the rationales offered just don't make sense in terms of public policy as to why they're making these changes.
Yeah.
So by implication, you need to look a bit deeper and see what's really going on. But either way, it's a big effort to defeat the bill, and it's looking somewhat promising. I'm curious if Eric or other guys could chime in on what they think on this bill.
Yes, we spent quite a bit of time in Sacramento trying to modify the bill so that it's at least something that we can survive.
The CCAs,
yes. The main premise was to change the whole process in how customers are signed up for the program, and also limiting the size of what area a CCA could actually serve. So we think that we've got it modified to the point where the sign-up options are still the same, and now we're just kind of seeing where it's going to go next.
Okay.
And if I could chime in again, I think more generally, you know, on the question of why utilities might oppose CCA, even though they're not directly affected revenue-wise, because, of course, utilities are shareholder-owned companies, their mandate is to expand their revenue base over time, and that means bringing in new customers. So any efforts that might affect their ability to bring in new customers in the future is a threat. And so even though CCA was crafted as kind of a middle ground between a full public utility like in Sacramento or L.A., and a full investor-owned utility like SCE or PG&E, it still has some implications for the investor-owned utility business model. And we can infer this pretty strongly based on the amount of money that PG&E, for example, has thrown in trying to defeat CCA in Marin County and more generally in a state proposition a few years ago. And its latest bill, AB 2145, seems to be kind of a new strategy to try and undermine CCA. So certainly they don't like CCA. They have to cooperate by state law and by PUC regulation, but they don't like it, that's for sure.
When does that bill come before voters? Is that in November? No.
Well, right now the
and
bill
does
is
it come
in
to vote?
Sacramento, so there's no public vote on it.
Oh, there isn't.
But it's come out of the Senate committee, and I don't know when it's actually up for an official vote. Perhaps others knew. No.
And I think what's important to look at here is, like, who's supporting and who's opposing.
Right.
The people that are opposing it is just a remarkably wide coalition of businesses and emerging community choice programs, local governments, environmental groups, business. You know, the list kind of goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the efforts that PG&E have made in the past to try and defeat community choice, it just time and again it fails. And so if you look at just the horizon of history, there's just dramatic momentum building around the expansion of these types of programs because it's a win-win for everybody. Sonoma's experiencing rate reductions, greater renewable energy content, a choice for consumers, competition that's driving both organizations to deliver greater value for customers. It's a win-win for everybody, and I think what it ends up doing is advancing our goals for more clean energy, more economic development, happier customers. And so this is just where things are going, and I think PG&E will recognize that, and I think they do recognize that in some extent, and are working to see how do we change our business model to be successful in this new energy economy that's being created.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org, part of the NPR Digital Network. My guests today are Eric Viem, member of the SLO Clean Energy Leadership Team and founder partner and senior engineer for Stockman's Water and Energy, Cordell Stillman, who is deputy chief engineer of Sonoma County Water Agency, and joining us by telephone is Tam Hunt, who is the owner of Community Renewable Solutions, LLC, a renewable energy project development and policy advocacy firm based in Santa Barbara, California, and Hilo, Hawaii. And our topic today is community choice aggregation, or CCAs, a way for communities to pool together participating electricity customers for purchasing and generating power on their own behalf. And you are certainly welcome to join in the conversation today. If you want to join us by phone, you can do so by calling 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875 with your comments or questions about today's topic. And Cordell, we were talking about the Sonoma Project, and Eric referred to the success that you've had. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, how that works? What does the Sonoma Project look like?
Well, we've rolled out to our first 22,000 customers last May 1st, and we're getting ready to roll out to the remaining 180 in December. So what we've managed to do is create an energy portfolio that's less carbon content and more renewable energy than PG&E, and we've been able to do it at a lower price. So our base product is 4 to 5% below PG&E's rates. We have another product which is 100% renewable, and it's all local renewable energy, nothing purchased from outside Sonoma County. And that can be purchased at a premium of about 15% over our base rate. That's not for everybody, of course, and it's not our default product. But those who want to do a little extra, have that feather in their cap, they can opt up to that that program. How we were able to do that was by opening up our energy market to a large number of energy providers. We had 12 energy companies from around the country bidding for our business.
For Sonoma County business.
For Sonoma County's okay. electricity generation business. Mm-hmm. That had not happened before. In Marin's case, they only had two or three energy providers bid on their portfolio. But we had 12, and we were able to then pick and choose between those who had the best product, who had the best business sense, their company concerns, things of that nature. And we narrowed that down to four, and then we had them bid off again. And what this told us was that there's room for competition here in this market. We were very pleasantly surprised by the rates that we got. We were thinking we would maybe be able to be, you know, right with PG&E, but right out of the box, we were able to provide our customers with a savings.
So how is the energy brought into Sonoma County?
The same way it's always been brought in. I mean, the energy business is you have a whole bunch of plants out there, and they all contribute to the grid. Where you buy your energy is where you contract for that power to be put onto the grid. And then the electrons are really
independent. So it's the same grid regardless of the provider that is providing your energy.
That's
whether
correct.
It's PG&E, Southern Electric, whoever it is.
Right. It's all controlled by the California Independent System Operator. They
okay.
decide how the power goes onto the grid and, you know, how it comes off. So it's really the same system. We're just the ones putting the electrons in. Not PG&E.
Okay. And then when you talk about things like solar, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, or people generating energy through alternative means, how does that come on?
Well, there's two ways of doing that. One is with the standard net energy metering program that is run by the investor-owned utilities, and we have the same type of program. Ours is a little bit better in that if a customer generates more electricity than they use, we'll pay them a little bit more for it than PG&E will. The other is that...
So there's incentivization for them to come through you rather than through another...
Yeah, we want to encourage the construction of local solar power.
Okay.
So this is one way of doing that, is to make give them some better incentives. The other is that you can save up your credits, and you don't necessarily have to be, you know, pay them out. You can let them roll over year to year until you, build up enough that you want to check.
Yeah. And I think just using that as an example, that comparison, if a goal of the program is local economic development, and you can use a simple adjustment in this energy policy to spur greater rooftop solar, that's a direct benefit to local business that are focused on installing rooftop solar systems or solar systems on parking lots or businesses, etc. So I was speaking with somebody from Sonoma yesterday who said that our hope or their hope through the their more attractive net metering program would be to double the rate at which rooftop solar is being installed. And so I think that's a noble goal, and I hope to see that type of outcome.
Tan, we're going to pick up another call. I want to make sure, though, before we lose you, that we circle back around with you and see if there's anything else you want to share with us or something you want to make sure that you – a point that you make.
Yeah, well, I'm very encouraged to hear from Cordell that they have very attractive offers to third parties, and that really highlights the point I've made for years now, is that going for a higher level of renewables does not mean you are paying necessarily more money. You can actually do that and save money. And this is because solar power and wind power, et cetera, are in fact far cheaper than they used to be, and when done smartly, can be cheaper than the grid mix. And so you also get the benefits of no volatility in pricing, and you get local economic development benefits at the same time. And one really powerful tool from going for CCA is basically creating, you know, enhancement metering, as was just discussed, but also creating what's called a feed-in tariff, where third parties can build projects to sell power directly to the grid, independent of any on-site use. And this can be really a way to utilize larger rooftops or parking lots, et cetera, to really fill in the infrastructure locally, keep that power local, keep that money local, mm-hmm. and really democratize power in many ways.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. And Thank you for coming all the way over from Hawaii to do so.
Happy to be here.
All
over
right.
There. Thank you.
Thanks, Tan. And we have a call from Bill. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. My question is that I haven't heard yet answered is how will the workers that are going to be working for this organization be represented? Will they be represented by unions, and are we going to be losing another whole layer of head of household jobs that has been provided by PG&E?
Well, when you think about how this is going to be put together, we don't anticipate there being more than 10 or 12 people running this organization, including, you know, all staff. All of the line work, all of the power generation work will remain with union jobs. That's the simplest way to put it. There's not you're not creating a whole big organization here. The only thing they have that this organization does is a contract for power. So it's a very light as far as personnel is concerned.
Yeah. And I think it's like absolutely to that point, when you look at some of the projects that are being developed in Marin, I think they just signed on a project for the labor that's building that generation that they're contracting for. There was a project labor agreement in place to use union workers. My company, Stockman's, works very closely with IBEW, and I see great opportunity both on the development of new solar projects and for the PG&E IBEW union to continue to expand the distribution grid and invest as investment in distribution continues. So I recognize that there's a conversation around this, a conflict, but I only see positive benefits for IBEW and union workers.
Yeah, and I think Bill, you ask an excellent question that kind of speaks to what we were talking about before, which is the resistance and concern about the bill that's actually in effect right now or being proposed right now that has voiced concern about what impact this has to workers, to the general population in terms of jobs,
yeah.
Correct?
I think that the union support that they're seeing behind 2145 is evolving. Relationships are being built in this process as Marin and MCE Clean Energy gets off the ground, and I imagine it may be the same with Sonoma. Those relationships are developing, and the conversation is evolving. In Monterey Bay, there is the Central Labor Council, I believe, has voted in support of community choice. They see opportunities for labor in that region as that's evolving. And I think what's important is that labor be at the table and that they are voicing their interests to ensure that we have these projects being built and are creating by folks who are getting paid a living wage.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to add that I've got a solar voltaic system on my roof. And my son is an electrician,
mm-hmm.
But I would never support this unless there were ironclad provisions for paying people the prevailing wage.
Yeah, and that's one thing that we're dealing with in Sonoma County as well. And one of the projects that I'm personally working on is a 15-megawatt project that we're going to build on reclaimed water ponds. And that is, because it's on a government property, it has to be a prevailing wage job. So that's the way we're going up there.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you for calling, Bill. You bring an important aspect into the conversation. Appreciate your call.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill.
I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, streaming live on the web at kcbx.org. If you're just now joining us live, you want to hear this show in its entirety, you can do so by going to kcbx.org when you have the time. Local shows on KCBX are archived for your listening convenience. It's just one of the many great features on our website, and really encourage you to check that out. Our topic today is creating local energy choice, and my guests are Eric Viem, member of the SLO Clean Energy Leadership Team and a founding partner partner and senior engineer for Stockman's Water and Energy, and Cordell Stillman, deputy chief engineer of Sonoma County Water Agency. And he's also going to be one of the speakers, a featured speaker tonight for a public workshop, Community Choice Energy, that's going to be taking place. Where is that, Eric? Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, this public workshop is going to be taking place this evening at the Slow City Library Community Room, and that's going to start promptly at 6:30. And it's going to be a great conversation talking about what's happening around the state. Cordell is going to discuss what's happened in Sonoma and what's possible now that their program is in place, and organize people around this idea that this is an opportunity worth exploring.
And something that's being looked at for San Luis Obispo County.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Right now. And what's important about this, because it takes the leadership of our community leaders and elected officials, is that voice of the people is so important in saying, hey, this is an opportunity that is worth looking at and worth exploring. It's working other places, and it might be a good fit for us. Let's take a serious look at it, and our leaders need to hear that.
And your questions, too. Questions and comments are welcome, just like they are here. And we got a question from Bill, who expressed his concern. We want to encourage you to call in. You can do so by calling us at 781-3875. We're taking calls on the air. And getting back to some discussion around the CCA, what kind of initial investment did you have to make, Cordell, as a county when you were setting up the CCA for Sonoma County? Was there an initial capital investment that happened?
Yes, there was, and it wasn't necessarily a capital investment. It was a loan. The Sonoma County Water Agency saw the potential in this program, so we took it, our board of directors, who is also the county board of supervisors, directed us to study the feasibility, provided us with the funds to do so. We took it in a very methodical approach through that whole process. Each time we came to a decision point, we brought it back to our board, and they authorized us to move forward. Over the 2 years that we invested in this process, we spent about $1.5 million. Now, that sounds like a lot of money.
It does.
But that included all of the consultant costs. It was mostly consultant costs, not as much staff time, to study the possibility, to study the data that we got from PG&E on the load structure and the load curves and things of that nature. That got us through the process of selecting an energy provider, which was several requests for information, requests for proposals, and analysis of all of those. And that was also some several hundred thousand dollars in marketing, where we brought a team on to brand the project and to make sure we got started on the right foot. So all told, about $1.5 million, and that is a loan that the water agency made to Sonoma Clean Power at 3% interest, and we will start getting our repaid for that loan in January of 2015.
And so the funds to repay that are going to be coming out of the profits from the actual project itself?
From the actual enterprise itself. Yeah, that was built into the business plan. They would be paid back at a certain rate over the life of that loan.
So is the Sonoma Clean Water Project, is this an entity? Is this a company?
It is a joint powers authority. And okay. that's a method where several government agencies can join together and create an authority. I think you have a waste management authority here San Luis Obispo, similar to that, obviously a different purpose. But that's how it was formed. We have a board of directors, which is made up of a city council person from each participating city and one of our board of directors.
Yeah. If I could add or ask the question is, in light of a $1.5 million investment, what is the annual revenue or projected annual revenue for Sonoma Clean Power?
Right now, the surplus revenue right now is about $1 million a month.
Okay. A month.
Oh, so what is the total, what's like total revenue for the organization?
I'm afraid I don't have that off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
But it's a significant
dollar. But the net revenue is $1 million a month.
Right. And that revenue right now, our board is still determining how they're going to use that. Either the first step for them, I think, is to Their goal is to set up a rate stability fund so that if there is some variation in the power costs, that they can smooth those power costs out and not have to raise rates, lower rates, raise rates, lower rates, give everybody a very continuous rate structure. From there, they'll look at investing in local generation, and it's really up to, again, it's up to the local board to decide how to use those revenues. It's either lowering rates, whether they want to build local projects, how they want to put that money back into the economy.
And how do people in Sonoma County sign up for this?
Well, that's one of the issues with community choice aggregation, is that the legislation that enacts it allows the CCA to enroll all of the customers automatically. It was perceived that the investor-owned utility had a competitive advantage by having all of the customers already enrolled in their systems. So the way it works is everybody's automatically enrolled, and then they have the ability to opt out and remain with the investor-owned utility. And that's as simple as a phone call or going on the website with your account number, and it can happen automatically.
And it's important to remember in that case is because this is a source of conflict for folks, but ultimately we were never given a choice to have PG&E as our provider in the first place. So what this enables is the creation of a competitive alternative and the choice to stay with the Sonoma Clean Power Program or a local San Luis Obispo clean energy program, or to go to PG&E, and there's plenty of opportunities to make that happen. So it's in order for these programs to be successful and actually create competition and choice, it was a wise structure within the legislation.
And you said you have how many customers that opted to remain with this program?
We have about 22,000 customers, and our opt-out rate is about 9%. About 9% of the folks that we've provided this program to have decided to remain with PG&E. In Marin County, their opt-out rate when they started up 3 or 4 years ago was 20%. So we're actually very, very pleased that the residents of Sonoma County, and actually we rolled out mostly to businesses in this first round of enrollments, we're very pleased that the opt-out rate has been as low as it has.
And people can opt in and opt out when? I mean, if they opt out at some point and then decide to change their mind, can they opt back in?
Yes, they can, but they have to wait at least 1 year.
1 year.
Because
it's an annual opt-in, opt-out.
It's after 1 year, they can either remain with the program or even wait 2 or 3 years and then decide. See, that's the idea behind this, is that it provides that competition that if we don't provide a good service to our customers, we'll lose them back to PG&E.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And also to add that at the launch of the program, all of the folks that are enrolled are given, what is it, 4 or 5 communications that's saying, hey, you have this option, and you've got time to just get out with to leave for free and without any question, So it's there's plenty of opportunity both at the beginning and later.
Let me ask you, Cordell, in Sonoma County, has PG&E been a major employer in your county?
They're a major employer just because of the distribution and transmission that runs through our county. In the past, they also owned several plants, generating plants up at the Geysers steam fields, but they were required to divest those as part of their bankruptcy process.
So do they have, in your county, do they have much influence over the tax base of the county in terms of contributions?
Yes, because they do have, because they sell, they have whatever the taxes on that, the sales
right.
are, and they also pay property taxes on their, some of their infrastructure.
Okay. And Eric, in San Luis County,
absolutely.
PG&E has a tremendous amount of visibility and also contribution to the tax base here. So do you see that there's a difference in terms of what?
Well, what I see first is Diablo Canyon is the source of a remarkable economic benefit for
absolutely.
Our county.
And has been for a number of years,
on the order of $1 billion. And
mm-hmm.
and so there's many folks whose lives and livelihoods are connected with Diablo. And
absolutely.
there's two pieces to that. One is community choice, a program in San Luis Obispo, wouldn't have any impact on Diablo and the operation of Diablo. It can operate side by side and provide additional economic benefit as a, in support.
So it wouldn't diminish
the operations.
Or
that energy is contracted. And, well, I mean, it's owned by PG&E and sold
and
to its customers.
And it's not only sold here in this county.
It's a utility-wide resource.
Right.
And so both can coexist and for the benefit of our community.
Right.
And on the other side of that is there's a question, you know, a growing concern that there's a possibility that Diablo will not be relicensed. There's a lot of issues that are in play around the relicensing, and it's prudent to start thinking about how do we start diversifying our economy now. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that drive us. Okay, clean energy is an obvious way that, for us to do that based on the values and priorities of our community. So why don't we do both? We can invest in a clean energy economy, and we can also mitigate the potential risk for an early or a non-relicensing of Diablo Canyon.
Got it. And we have a question or a comment from Connie. Connie, are you there?
I am here.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You had a question or comment?
Yes, yes. Very interesting topic. Thank you for bringing this up.
You're welcome.
And in relation to power in general, as the world is warming and air conditioners are running, I think we're going to need both Diablo and whatever else. I think we're going to need it all. And I may be way off base in this question, but I tend to be kind of out there. I take things to the next logical steps. And I'm wondering how big a power generator has to be to provide power, because I'm thinking, what if a neighborhood or a city wanted to do a lot of solar and be a power provider? How big would they have to be to provide for a community choice project?
Well, that wouldn't have to be very big at all. We've just authorized a program in Sonoma County that was mentioned earlier, a feed-in tariff program, and we actually limit the size to being below 1 megawatt. And we want to try and develop distributed generation.
Let me add that 1 megawatt, so you get a feel for that. So on top of the Costco roof, that's about a 500, that's about half of a megawatt. So
okay,
you get a feel for
got
that.
Got it.
So that program is now in place, and we should be taking proposals in the next couple of 3 months. And again, we're trying to build about 5 megawatts this round. And if it goes well, we'll designate some more money to encourage that.
I will just tell you where my question comes from. I have had solar on my roof for 10 years.
Great.
And I'm really happy with them. They provide all the power I need, and we're a pretty power-intense family. you know, some people aren't, and we are. So, but we make everything we need and a little bit more. Not much, but a little bit. And so I look out over my neighborhood and say, look, if there were panels on every one of those roofs, this neighborhood could generate, you know, I don't know how much, but, you know, it's not very expensive to do that.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, thank you.
It's a remarkable resource, both on rooftops of homes and businesses, on top of parking lots like we have at Slow High. We've actually done an inventory of renewable resource potential over like solar and wind and a variety of things like that. And we have substantial resource to meet all of our needs, you know, technically. And
who
so and so there's a big opportunity there.
Which individual just gave that comment?
This is Eric from Slow Clean Energy.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Connie.
And Arroyo Grande High now has panels in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen those go up.
Look at that. You get, you know, your lunch, you know, you get to shade your car. And you get to generate power, and especially with, you know, the new plug-in vehicles, you could. This is happening where you can plug in your vehicle at those locations and charge while you're at work or at school with clean energy from the sun. It's remarkable.
Excellent. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Connie, and good luck with those solar panels.
Thank you.
So with the community that you were talking about, Cordell, how much power would that actually generate? I mean, for the community, it would be enough power, or?
Not sure where the community came from. If we're just trying to develop distributed energy in Sonoma County. So we've broken off a chunk of our revenues or a chunk of our portfolio, 5 megawatts, that we're going to put into this feed-in tariff program.
Ah, got it. Okay.
So when that is fully subscribed, we'll take another look and see if we can afford to do another 5 megawatt chunk.
And okay. And so I think to answer your question, if the average home uses, like maybe large home uses 5 kilowatts, that's 1,000 homes that are being served with clean energy through that portion of the project.
So what prevents that kind of a system from being developed? You don't see a lot of movement toward what Alice was talking about.
Well, go ahead, please.
After you.
We do see that movement. Last year in California, we installed more solar than we have in the last 30 years combined. And so what's happening here and around the world is this transformation of energy. In the same way that we've seen communications change with cellular technology and cell phones in the last 10 years, that's what we're seeing in the next 10 years. And so we'll be seeing a lot more of it. The cost of solar has come down, like I think it's like 80% in the last 5 years.
Will it really start to supplant?
Absolutely. There are solar, I think I read recently of a solar project that was able to provide power less than the cost of natural gas. You know, mm-hmm. So in certain markets at this point, as it evolves, mm-hmm. it's competitive with all existing power sources. So,
is there any resistance to it at this point?
Not that you see, because I think everybody seems to recognize that it's because you're not paying for natural gas or some other fuel, your long-term costs are not volatile. So it makes it a good investment. We're seeing bids for power with very, very competitive with natural gas with no escalation rate. No cost, you know, it doesn't go up 2% every year because you don't have the volatility of the natural gas.
What is your hope, Eric, with the workshop that you have tonight and bringing Cordell here to San Luis County?
My hope is for people to really to see this as the opportunity that it is and start a conversation across the county for a serious exploration of this. Because from what I'm seeing in Marin and Richmond, what I'm seeing in Sonoma, what I'm seeing happening in Monterey Bay, this is an opportunity worth exploring. It's bringing people together. For example, in Monterey Bay, 21 jurisdictions in 3 counties, San Benito, Santa Cruz, and Monterey County, are working together to explore this. That's the largest collaboration that I'm aware of for a clean energy program. And that's people of all across the political spectrum. I work a lot in the Salinas Valley with the farmers. My business is focused on working with farmers. And so we've got folks in King City mm-hmm. Who have signed on to be part of this, and people in Santa Cruz. I mean, that's the most diverse sort of political spectrum that you can reach. And to speak about, like, what this makes possible for the farmers is we recently were working with one of the larger farmers up there, and they've got increasing energy costs because they're pumping more, because right. we're having this drought. And so the cost of their energy just continues to rise. And to be able to put solar in place, especially with recent policy that's directed to help farmers, they're paying for a project that pays itself off in 7 years, and then they've got another 23 years of free energy from that project. It's just there's remarkable things happening in the market, and it's both economical, environmental, and benefit to the community.
And so are you foreseeing that, for instance, farmers would become part of these CCA projects as well, further benefiting from reduced costs?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the farmers, the vineyards, they in particular have something to benefit from this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you seeing those obviously are some of the customers, because you've got the vineyards up in Sonoma.
Yeah, I was going to mention we have a couple of grapevines up there.
Just a couple, yeah. In Paso, we have a few too.
one of our earlier supporters was actually the Gallo company. So they were very helpful in getting these things started. So
are you getting feedback from those customers about how it's impacted their business or their cost?
I'm not myself particularly, right. But I will tell you a little story that not too long ago, we sent out a postcard that's required by the law that compares our rates to PG&E's, and it compares our carbon content to PG&E's. And we sent it out. It was sent out to all PG&E customers in the county. Now, we're only serving 22,000 at the moment, but the other 150,000 got this postcard. We got over 800 calls from people saying, why can't I do this now? Hmm. Why do I have to wait until December even? Mm-hmm. So that was one of our impetuses to move the rollout of the remaining customers up to December. There's a large appetite in Sonoma County to become a part of this.
And Eric, what kind of support would be needed after this workshop? What do you see as the mm-hmm. next step? One is information.
Absolutely.
Starting the conversation yeah. is something that you mentioned. What kind of support is needed? Is there support needed from political leaders? I mean, you talked about Board of Supervisors was involved. What's needed here?
Well, the first is this needs to be, this is driven by the people. And so we're active in reaching out to the business community, to the mm-hmm. agricultural community, and to just regular people in all of our communities, you know, whether you're in Paso or in San Luis Obispo. And so that's the first, the piece is to really show that they're to the electeds, because they're the ones that ultimately need to say, yes, this is something that we'll support. And so through this workshop, we're going to help people learn about the opportunity. And then afterwards, we're going to give people opportunity to keep in touch so that we can communicate about opportunities to, for example, San Luis Obispo City Council has made it loud and clear to us that they want us to, in order for this to be a priority, it needs to be made a major city goal. So we're going to bring people out in force to that goal setting process in order to show the leaders, like, this is something that's important to people. So mm-hmm. that's one of the things. And then, so the business leaders, again, need to demonstrate, the business leaders and all folks in general, we're working to bring their support to make it visible. And so, again, there's the keeping in touch. The second is supporting this effort. We have got these remarkably cool T-shirts that...
Well, if you got a T-shirt,
we've got
then,
cool T-shirts.
You know,
I mean, our designer has just been phenomenal and has created the most beautiful logo for Slo Clean Energy, and we think it's just beyond being a cool a great opportunity for the economy and the environment. It's also just cool. So
to show up and wear one.
Yeah, to show up and show off, and so there's that piece of it, and then third is to really show a visible support so that the electeds can see. This is something that we need to make a priority.
Cordell, Eric's really talking about a grassroots effort. Is mm-hmm. that what started in Sonoma, or was your effort more driven by government and by, you know, officials saying, we want you to look at this?
No, this was absolutely a grassroots
effort.
There's a group up there called the Climate Protection Campaign that was behind the scenes on this process all the way through. They got the elected officials interested, and... to the point where I was directed. I'm a civil engineer. I know my job is to build pipelines and treatment plants, and I was directed to take this on. And I can tell you, it's a real career changer to be a part of this.
How long did it take from beginning to actually having people buying energy?
It was a little over 3 years. We began this process in March of 2011. With authorization to do a feasibility study, and we went through that whole step-by-step process that I kind of described before. And that's one of the advantages that San Luis Obispo has here, is that you're not breaking ground.
Yeah.
There's all of the documentation, all that we have, that Marin has, is available to you. In fact, the city of Lancaster went ahead and decided to form a CCA without even going through the feasibility process, because it had been shown that it was feasible. And their mayor just is a real champion of this type of thing. He's a very conservative guy, as I recall.
Absolutely.
He's a
yep.
GOP kind of guy, and he's embracing it fully and moving forward.
Yeah, and you know, and I think it's great not to have to recreate and go through all, because I'm assuming that anytime you break new ground, you're going to go through missteps.
I think it's called the bleeding edge.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. What do you think was one of the biggest missteps that you made?
Well, I can't claim to have made any missteps, Chris.
Really? Probably no, not, no. Cordell. Yeah. I really want to point out here that what we're talking about is not a slam of PG&E.
No,
you're not talking
absolutely
not about undermining, because what I'm hearing is that this is something that can benefit the community but does not necessarily take away from a power source or a power company like PG&E.
I mean, it creates healthy competition.
Yes.
You know, like whether you're picking AT&T for your internet or you're picking Charter Internet, those types of services drive innovation and drive benefits to customers. And that's really the most important thing.
Did you have conversations with PG&E in your area, Cordell? Is that something that?
Yeah, we have to have conversations. Yeah. We have to have a very close relationship with them because we bill, we're on the same bill as they are.
Right.
I mean, we use their billing process and they charge us. We pay them for it,
right.
But that's part of the game. We have to have a very close relationship with them as far as sharing data and making sure that our customers receive the correct bills.
Yeah. And the grid is theirs.
Yes.
And so from my perspective, PG&E is a key partner in this. So there's two different kind of heads to PG&E. One is that they are the distribution utility. And so a community choice program needs to work very closely with PG&E because they're the folks that deliver power reliably, interconnect these projects to the grid, and so a healthy cordial relationship is critical.
Well, and my point being that they're also going to be at the table with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially in this community.
Okay, so we have want to remind you that Community Choice Energy Workshop tonight and the Thursday night, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the SLO Public Library Community Room, 995 Palm Street in San Luis Obispo, and an opportunity for you to hear Cordell and also Eric as they're talking about this topic in more detail. Next week on Central Coast Voices, host Fred Monroe will be joined by guests Byron Smith with CAPSLO, Dr. Ryan Alanis, Assistant Professor of Sociology at Cal Poly, and Kenneth Trigueiro, the Executive Vice President and CFO of People's Self-Help Housing, to discuss how the high cost of living locally affects residents of San Luis Obispo County and what our community can do to help improve the quality of life for those who call Central Coast a home. I want to thank my guests today, Eric Vam and Cordell Stillam. I also want to thank Tan Hunt, who joined us by phone from Hawaii. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. Your suggestions for future shows, topics are always welcomed. Please send them to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and I want to thank you for joining me today and guests for calling in on Central Coast Voices. Thank you.
Thank you.